procedure?
Yes. The audit, the Franklin County Board of Revision constantly, or does include the property wrecker card, plus any other documentation that the county auditor might have. So in the record was the property wrecker card. The Franklin County Board of Revision also included the copies of the documents. The record specifically says that the Board of Revision refused to accept those documents into evidence, but a proffer was made. So those documents were included. If this court is going to affirm the decision of the BTA, I mean, that's fine. What we seek from the court, attorneys who represent boards of education, assistant county prosecutors who represent Board of Revisions, we'd like to know what kind of evidence, what quantum of evidence the property owner must present. Need the attorney only come in and present the document? Does the document have to be relevant to the facts? How about mailing documents? Why would the court require the property owner's attorney to come in and submit the document when the document wasn't relevant? Why not allow the property owner simply to mail the documents in? Do the documents have to be relevant to any of the facts that Mr. Murdy testified to?
Well, the other thing that bothered me is that when documents are submitted after the hearing, you can't cross-examine or ask any questions about them.
No. And I suspect that's why those documents were proffered. I mean, they were not admitted into evidence. Now, we get up to the BTA, and we would respectfully submit to this court that you can't rely upon the analysis or theory of the BTA. I mean, if we're going to lose, if 571519G doesn't apply to a property owner, okay, that's fine. But the BTA held that Mr. Murdy's testimony was intended to authenticate the documents. And of course, that's a little joke on all of us. Mr. McMurdy did not authenticate the documents. He was never asked to do that. He wasn't even asked any questions about the documents.
They were never presented to him, and they were never introduced into evidence.
They were never introduced into evidence. They were never handed or showed to Mr. Murdy. He never was asked a question about the documents. He never identified the documents. None of his factual testimony is to be found in the documents. Obviously, his testimony was not intended to authenticate. The BTA also said that Mr. Murdy's testimony was intended to amplify the documents, and that's likewise nonsense.
One question I have is, Mr. Murdy was never asked whether that was a fair value or anything, was he?
No, okay. He was not. Mr. Murdy was not an appraiser, and he did not, as I recall, render an opinion of value. He was not asked his opinion of value.
Well, the documents, from my review of them, it sets forth a total value of $123 million, I think, for 10 projects. But the appendix, which supposedly was going to set forth the breakout of that value, is gone. I mean, it's not there.
That is correct, Your Honor. The documents submitted to the Board of Revision did not contain the attachments or the exhibits that identified the 10 properties.
So it was not a complete document?
No. In fact, the purchase agreement refers to 8 of the properties, and I picked out that page, but not the Franklin County property. As far as we know, that document isn't even a relevant document. Now, I suspect it is the relevant document, but there is no evidence in the record of this case to show that purchase agreement is relevant to what we're talking about now. It doesn't identify the property. Mr. Murdy did testify that the total purchase price was not an allocation. Each of the 10 properties were separately and independently appraised, and the appraised price was used as the purchase price. So the total price wasn't an allocation, simply a sum total of the 10 properties. and the reason for that was that the buyers were two public agencies, and Mr. Murdy testified that when you're dealing with public agencies, everything has to be on the up and up. I would respectfully ask this court, as far as Division G is concerned, to hold that the BTA erred, that the property owner is required to submit at least some evidence. I'm talking about admissible evidence. It could be a document. It can be the testimony of somebody involved in the sale. That's fine. Some admissible evidence that has some factual relevance to the claim that the sale was not an arm's length sale, that the property, that the buyer and the seller were related.
Clearly, you're saying that just because something was submitted to the Board of Revision, it's not evidence.
No, and that's specifically what the Franklin County Court of Appeals held in Almondtree, that the rules, as this court has said, the rules of evidence do not apply, or they're relaxed. Mm-hmm. But administrative law and the decision of Franklin County Court of Appeals specifically says that a Board of Revision, being a quasi-judicial body or an administrative body, must base its decision on competent probative evidence. I don't think anybody disputes that the BOR can't make a decision based upon totally inadmissible evidence. So the board had no choice in this case but to affirm to accept the sale price. It's presumed to be arm's length sale. Sale price is presumed to represent the true value. There's no admissible evidence in the record, just a proffer. And we get up at the BTA and we have a full-blown trial de novo with Mr. Murdy, who presents precisely the kind of new evidence that 5715.19G was intended to prohibit, and which the BTA says is not new evidence. The final aspect of this case, of course, is the BTA's holding that simply because the seller ended up with a 9% ownership interest and the buyer throws out the sale, makes the sale non-arm's length because the parties are related. In our brief, we simply suggested to the court that whether the sale is an arm's length sale, whether the parties are related, and whether that has any effect on the transaction is a question of fact, not law. So as a matter of law, the fact that the buyer had a 9% interest in the seller is irrelevant. As a matter of fact, it certainly may, it may prove that the sale was not an arm's length sale. However, the facts...
Do you think you can have an arm's length transaction in this type of situation?
Oh, and Mr. Murdy testified that this was an arm's length sale.
But he never used those words.
But. Well, he testified, well, arm's length sale, and that is correct. An arm's length sale in the essence that there, in the sense that there's a willing buyer, willing seller, that no compulsion, that they independently negotiated and arrived at a sale price that was in their own best interest. Mr. Murdy testified that those were the facts of this case. So the BTA's holding is contradicted by the very facts. The sale price was based on independent appraisals.
The only thing you didn't have, I think, would be the open market.
There is no, that is correct. There is, the testimony was that the property was not sold on the open market. The seller went to its various clients and asked if they were interested in the sale.
But you still could have a fair value.
Statute 5713.03 does not require an open market sale. Many of the commercial sales that the BTA and this court have held have been arm's length, have not taken place on the open market. You generally don't sell large real estate apartment complexes, shopping centers like that. You don't read about them in the newspaper. As long as the facts prove that arm's length independently negotiated, everybody operating in their own best interest, then that is an arm's length sale. despite the fact that it did not take place on the open market. I thank the court for its consideration.
Mr. Peckovic.
Good morning, Mr. Houseworth. I'm Wayne Peckovic on behalf of the taxpayer CASA 94 Limited Partnership. First and foremost, I think that the board, or the board, that the court's been given an extremely incomplete exponent of the facts as they really exist in this matter. Number one, Phoenix Mutual Life Insurance Company, from now on Phoenix, as the record clearly indicates, had an overabundance of assets tied up in real estate. It was affecting their ratings with Moody's, and it was mandatory that they dispose or at least get their name off of certain real estate holdings. They went to the Utah State Employees Retirement Fund and the Alaska Permanent Fund, which is the repository fund for the Alaska pipeline revenues. Up until that point, I think the record shows that one of the public entities had approximately $180 million invested with Phoenix in either joint ventures or property that Phoenix was operating, and the other one somewhere around $130 million. They spun off 10 properties, and one of them was the subject real estate.
Mr. Peckovic, your client, or somebody on behalf of your client, signed a conveyance fee form saying that this property transferred for about $18 million plus, right, a little bit. What's the relevance of that? I mean, they do that under oath, and they sign it.
First of all, you know, one of the bugaboos about that form, and it's come before this court repeatedly, is there are many times when people will sign those things not knowing the nature or import of what they are. You put the higher number in there because you're afraid not to pay the conveyance tax. They look at it as a tax form. They're not going to indicate something less than what the closing statement may be, or even if it involves personal property, they usually put the full load in there because they'll pay the $2 per thousand tax and they don't want to file some kind of bad tax return. What they don't understand is the fact that school boards use these documents as their only evidence and will initiate legal proceedings that end up all the way in the Supreme Court.
Well, no one ever contended, though, that this form was wrong. I mean, Mr. Murdy never testified that the form was wrong, did he?
Well, no. Mr. Murdy testified that there was an allocation of a lump sum of assets located in several states. Now, first of all, what needs to be borne in mind here, Mr. Houseworth, is this proceeding was started by the filing of a complaint with Franklin County Board of Revision by the appellant school board. Now, Mr. Gorey's reliance, or the school board's reliance, on the Garfield case — Garfield was a situation in which the taxpayer filed a complaint, withheld certain information, got caught doing it, and was not allowed to use it later. It didn't involve a situation where the taxpayer was not the initiator of the proceedings. Now, the school board, in filing a complaint, has just as much duty to prove its case as anyone else. Now, Mr. Gorey's opening statement to you was that some attorney came and plopped some documents down in front of the Board of Revision and said, accept these. So that's exactly what the school board did. They sent an associate down there who plopped a conveyance form and a copy of the deed in front of the Board of Revision and said, this is the sum total of our evidence.
But at the BTA, you were the appellant.
Well, Your Honor, the taxpayer can never be eliminated from a proceeding involving his own property.
I understand.
I think that's against all the constraints of due process and equal protection.
But you were the appellant, so the burden...
Admittedly, and the fact of the matter is that it was raised at the Board of Revision. Now, Mr. Gorey's got this idea, which has been thrown out by this court on several times, that there is this completely non-rebuttable presumption that a conveyance form is the sole evidence regardless of whatever is produced. And this Supreme Court, at least as early as 1996 in Lakeside Avenue Limited Partnership, cited our brief at page 11, indicated that it is not an absolute presumption. There have been several decisions to that effect.
There is a presumption there, though.
It's a rebuttable presumption. Now, Mr. Gorey also talked about sending records to the Board of Revision that were not produced at the hearing and subject to cross-examination or whatever. Number one, those documents were sent, and if the court would look carefully at the record, as opposed to the fractured analysis of what's contended to be the facts in this matter, you'll find that the Board of Revision requested additional documents, which were, in fact, sent by the taxpayer to the Board of Revision. Now, whether they wanted to accept them, ignore them, or do whatever, that was incumbent on the Board of Revision. In addition, if you look at Strongsville, which is cited in our brief at page 9, and the majority of our first proposition of law, this Supreme Court said, consequently, we affirm the Board of Tax Appeals' factual findings. If sufficient probative evidence or record supports these findings, we also affirm the BTA's rulings on the credibility of witnesses and the weight to be attributed to evidence if the BTA has exercised sound discretion in rendering these rulings. Now, I think the linchpin of what we're talking about here is this decision that's appealed from, either unreasonable or unlawful. And I would respectfully assert it is not and cannot be. Well, there is no evidence on behalf of the school board other than they're not happy with the decision they ultimately got.
Don't we have to start back, though, with the documents that were introduced?
All right. If we start with the documents that were introduced, you, Mr. Houseworth, number one, if you look at the form in which you appear, a Board of Revision has been specifically stated by this court in RRZ, which is included in our brief, that number one, that a Board of Revision is not a court. It is not a judicial body. Call it quasi-judicial, if you will, but it is not a truly, and using the court's words, not a truly impartial tribunal.
I understand that, but should, it seems to me the question is, at the Board of Revision, should counsel or someone other than counsel, even perhaps, be able to come in and present documents without anyone there to authenticate them or discuss them or answer questions about them?
I
think proffered these documents, as I understand, but you didn't have a witness.
I don't think the documents need be authenticated. They raise a question as to whether or not the assertion of the associate from the school board's law firm in saying they had no witnesses to authenticate anything either.
Well, they had public records.
Well, they have public records, but public records are not always the end-all either. This court, you know, if you look at the cases this court decided, if you take Kroger versus Hamilton County Board of Revision, there was a tax conveyance form filed in that, and this court specifically held that that particular transaction was not an open market arm's length transaction. There was this public record filed. The same happened Waters versus Knox County Board of Revision in 1989, 47 Ohio State 23rd. It happened in Lakeside Avenue Limited Partnership versus Cuyahoga County. There have been innumerable instances where this court has specifically ruled, notwithstanding that the only evidence provided by a school board was a conveyance form, that that is not the sum total of the evidence.
No, I don't think anyone disputes that. Now, let me ask you a question. The documents that you did present, when I looked those through, they don't contain the full document. In other words, there were attachments that were referred to in the document that are not attached.
Mr. Houseworth, archival records, we did the best we could to get what we wanted within the time constraints the Board of Revision gave us. I think they gave us 2 weeks, if I recall correctly.
There's an appraisal in that document that was, and Mr. Murdy, as I believe, testified that tell me how the value was set. Was it an allocation or was it not an allocation? Was it just a cumulative?
There was a cumulative allocation of projected discounted cash flow analyses.
Okay. Because
predicated on the most optimistic scenario that they could devise.
But we have to believe that your client, this was a fair price, whatever it was.
Well, the problem with saying that this is a fair price is you have a situation in which the partnership absorbed a mortgage that Phoenix, through CASA, became an investor in. Phoenix retained, through CASA, the right to manage the real estate, which carries with it a certain obvious benefits. In addition to that, an additional mortgage was granted by Phoenix to the limited partnership, which it had created in-house. Number three, there were no duties or responsibilities with regard to the operation of the property or anything else on the passive investors, which were these two retirement funds. Which, plus, Phoenix gave a guarantee to its public investors. Now, that's a situation which belies the fact that this is a
Phoenix
normal real estate transaction. Sir?
Phoenix gave a guarantee?
There were certain guarantees given by Phoenix, yes.
I didn't remember that.
And Phoenix granted a mortgage to essentially itself and its two public entities. Now, you know, the sum total of that is that what you're looking at is this decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, where this question is raised on appeal. Okay.
Okay, now let me ask you a question.
Is it wrong for the board to say, pursuant to 5715.19, which specifically gives them the power to order the hearing of additional evidence, how can you say that with that question and this statutory transcript, that the Board of Tax Appeals abused its discretion in doing specifically what was provided in 5715.19.
Do you think that by coming in and only saying that a value set forth in a conveyance fee statement was not the result of an arm's length transaction, that you bear any burden to then show what the value should be?
I don't believe so. And I believe that, under this situation...
But the whole question at the Board of Tax Appeals is value, isn't it?
Well, that's what this court stated in some cases of which I'm painfully aware, where I had a client buy two office buildings for $14,500,000, which the county in its infinite wisdom assessed at $19 million, and because there weren't appraisals on this particular sale, the court said that we'll leave it on at $19 million. The idea that A plus B equals 14.5, A plus B cannot equal $19 million. But in this particular instance, you have essentially something initiated by a school board that did nothing with regard to the case other than giving the Board of Revision two pages of paper, two Xerox forms, and that was it.
But wasn't it your burden at the Board of Tax Appeals to show that the value of the BOR was incorrect?
No. It was our burden to show that the decision upon, that the basis upon which the Board of Revision acted was erroneous.
Okay. Now, if I come in and show only that a sale was not an arm's length sale, does that show that the value is wrong?
Well, this court has stated where there is no evidence of value, the Board of Tax Appeals is not constrained to find the value of the property to be that which is listed by the county auditor on his assessment record. So my answer would be, if you do not have any appraisal evidence and you find that whatever activity of the county it was found to be unwarranted, then the only other thing that you can fall back upon, is as was done here, is the determination of the county auditor himself.
So you don't think you bore any burden?
I think that our burden was to show, and I see my time's up, that we were, that it was incumbent on us to show that this bulk transaction and what emanated from it was not arm's length as defined by this court. And I think we sufficiently did that, and I don't see where the, and I don't see in any way where the Board of Tax Appeals has been shown either at the Board of Revision or in the briefs or any citations that I've read with regard to the documents filed heretofore, whether there was any abuse of discretion or whether the Board of Tax Appeals decision is unreasonable and unlawful.
But going back again, I don't want to beat this point too much, but one of the things the BTA is trying to find, of course, is the true value. Mm-hmm. And if you just come in, if you sell a house to your brother, mm-hmm. and I would think that probably they would find that not to be an arm's length transaction because they're related parties.
Not necessarily. There have been instances where family transactions have found to be arm's length.
And so that's a factual matter. Mm-hmm. And they find it as a factual matter, it was not an arm's length transaction. Does that necessarily mean that the value was not a, you know, fair market value?
If they found it not to be a an arm's length transaction?
Right.
Well, if they find it not to be an arm's length transaction, then
they find it not to be an arm's length transaction.
Well, the fundamental firmament of the Board of Revision's activity then is wrong. The fact that they was raised pursuant to something found not to be of that evidentiary value as dictated in 5717 or 5701-03.
But does the mere finding of a non-arm's length transaction render the value worthless?
No, it doesn't render any value worthless. What it does is render the efficacy of what is brought forth by the Board of Revision, i.e. the conveyance form and the deed, as not being dispositive of the issue of the number on the conveyance form being the number at which the Board of Revision should set the value.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Right. Mr. Gorey, you have about 39 seconds or so.
I thank the court. I want to just emphasize again what our position is. If property owner files a countercomplaint, contends that the sale was not an arm's length sale, and the property owner goes before the Board of Revision by way of counsel and presents documents which the Board of Revision holds not to be admissible. So we have totally inadmissible hearsay evidence presented to the Board of Revision. Now, if the Board of Revision in that case accepts the sale price, rejects the owner's evidence, then when you get to the BTA, 5715-19G says that you cannot present testimony concerning the terms and conditions of the sale, the motivation of the parties, the relatedness of the parties, all of that stuff. You cannot present that without showing good cause. The statute applies, and I thank the court.
Thank you, Mr. Gorey. The case will be submitted to the court and you'll be advised of the result.